previously on the Owls AmeriCast. I don't actually know the rest of the Great Escape theme. This is the Owls America Chef on Wednesday opinion with an American accent. I'm sorry for that. It was not very good. You know what? Let's try a different song this week.
She's crazy like a fool.
What about Daddy Cool?
Obviously, you said it, as you say, it's been a difficult start for the team so far, but obviously you're confident that we can turn things around, and it's still very early in the season as well.
Yeah, I think my experience in the past is very helpful because in Southampton we had nearly the same situation. We started immediately with a match, and then we had our first home match against Arsenal, and we took a win 3-1. And I know what we can do in 1 week, how we can prepare this team for this week, and it is all about the conviction. That we are all thinking in one direction, and if we do this, then we will be successful for sure.
Again, he tries to get the beating of his man. Bannon goes towards the box, puts it in the air, it's headed in, hits the post,
yeah!
It's there! It's in for another rebound! It's been touched in! It's Masaba, I think he's got it! The ball hit the post, I think it was Fletcher who had the first header, and Wednesday have real joy at the end of this game!
Motion
down that left hand side.
Clips it into the centre.
Falling.
This is a chance.
It's oh! Wednesday get a third. Josh Windass.
Down the side. Crossing opportunity. It stood up in the air. Can we connect with
him? And again, it's Ogbo Risenhurst at the back post. And converting for Sheffield Wednesday. That second goal has arrived. And it's arrived for Ogbo at the top end.
Corner then goes over. Can Wednesday do the same again for the second?
No!
Wednesday can't go in!
No!
What a huge day for Sheffield Wednesday! What a story! And Wednesday have come back from 2-0 down. The Canaries are not singing anymore! Wow, what a night! What a comeback! What a club!
Keeper's come a long way out of his box here and heads it to a teammate. Good pressing there from Masaba. Wins it back. Windass tries.
What a goal! Yes! What a goal!
It's a magic for Sheffield Wednesday. The away end explodes here at Ewood Park. It is absolutely fantastic from Josh Windass. This is good play from Will Vaux.
Two against two.
Okay, Ogbo. It is two against two. Ogbo running alongside Masaba, who gets possession now. Windass in the middle. Played it towards Windass. Here's a chance.
Oh, my word!
It's Marvin Johnson at the far post, who hammers it home in front of the 7,000 Wednesday fans. What a moment for the Owls.
Will Vaux slides it in now for Anthony Masaba, trying to get away from 2 or 3. He goes through. Masaba, it doesn't quite stick with him. He goes down.
We are!
Oh,
it's
oh,
it!
Smashing it at home. Wednesday were looking for a penalty. It came back for Ike Ogbo. And Wednesday moment, have done it again. We had Mission Impossible last season. Is this Mission Impossible too?
Goes in towards Bannon. Bannon lets rip, saves. Follow on. Put it in.
No!
On the wing! Oh, it's 3-0 Sheffield Wednesday! We can surely relax now! My voice has gone away, but I don't really care! What a day it's been here at Hillsborough!
Here's a chance for Valentin. Valentin gets
it. Ooh,
ball. Pull back, it's 2-0! Yeah. It's Josh Windass who fires in from the edge of the 6-yard box, and that could be it for Sheffield Wednesday. Windass fires in from close range. He celebrates with the Wednesday fans. The Owls 2-0 up and heading for championship survival.
I think when I arrived in October, I'm not sure how many people really believed that we can stay in the league. And today, with the final whistle, we stay up and outstanding, really outstanding. And
are we able to pick up from that?
No, we can't.
They've done it again, and we'll talk about it here on the Owls AmeriCast, Sheffield Wednesday Opinion with an American Accent. I'm your host in Salt Lake City, Jeffrey Paternostro. I should have something more celebratory, but I'm moving soon, so I'm trying to keep, to use up what I have left in the house for liquor, and I don't really have anything fancy. So instead, I'm just finishing up currently one of the Bohemian Brewery Kolsches that I had last week. And behind that, I have the Cultura Cerveza, a Mexican-style lager from Ogden Beer Company in Ogden, Utah, about a half hour north of here. You can't see it because this is an audio format, but I'm wearing my my pink away kit from 2 years ago because Justin is not on the show. He's watching the Bruins. He's watching hockey instead of doing Wednesday-related things, much like he did in Halifax. But we do have a full crew nonetheless, and we'll start in Portland with our Cascadia Owl, Mike LaRue. And Mike, what are you drinking?
Hey, I just literally dropped off the carpool because it's only 6 p.m. out here. So I'm just finishing off the tea from work earlier today. I, too, did not buy anything celebratory, probably to avoid jinxing anything this weekend. So I'm taking it.
I'm just exhausted. I'm exhausted. I was up at 5:30, so I was exhausted. We've registered some new players on the squad to fill out the roster tonight. You might have heard of them once before. First off, in Bluffton, it's our Ohio Owl, Evan Skelter. Evan, what are you drinking?
Yeah, Bluffton, the Portland of the East. Very excited to be here. Only for a short time for this episode. I apologize, but duty calls. Hey, today I'm drinking a Hazy Truth IPA from Rheingeist Brewery. Yeah. It's the hazy take on their flagship IPA, which was just called Truth IPA. Truth is a very earthy, one of the earthiest IPAs I think that I can tolerate, if you will. But you add a little fizz to the Truth, and you've got a good brew. So really excited to be here. Like I said, I think this is the first episode all year.
You haven't been on since the Peterborough second leg. we only come in for the celebratory ones, which is probably the good way to do
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
You're the, yeah, exactly. You're the glory seeking version of the podcast host.
But you know, that's not to say I haven't been active, right? So some work on the Sheffield Wednesday supporters engagement panel, which has been one of the most interesting
interesting. Good word. Yeah, good word to use.
I won't. It's been fine. It's been good. But interesting. I'll put it there. And if we want to get into it in a second, we can.
Well, it's been an interesting season overall for all of Wednesday supporters. And we have a fourth Sheffield Wednesday supporter on the pod. Tonight, it is in South Carolina. Tommy Byrne. Tommy, what are you drinking?
Well, I'm keeping it classy here, gents. I'm having a Coors Banquet.
That's celebratory.
It's like a banquet.
Banquet, sorry. Yeah. It's the end of season banquet, basically.
My bathroom is getting completely redone, so I'm just sticking a cheap beer so I can
afford the bathroom remodel. Yeah. We're just going with a new coat of paint inside of the new place, and we'll deal with the rest as it comes. Well, Wednesday have a new coat of paint in the summer. We'll see. But first, we'll discuss the Sunderland match, the season writ large. Take a look to a very important transfer window as Wednesday attempt to kick on in the championship. And we'll go over our preseason previews, which Mike has helpfully collated for me because that was going to be a lot of work for me otherwise. I'm glad I did not have to do it. I am perfectly happy to talk about the Sunderland game then. In a word, survival. That's it. That's all there is to say. Wednesday needed a point. They got three, and they needed a point because there were 27 permutations, as we discussed last week, and only one of them would see Wednesday relegated. And every other possible result that would have led to that 1-in-27 shot played out. But at the end of the day, Wednesday got two first-half goals against Sunderland. And look, I'm not going to say it was ever comfortable, but around the 90th minute, I was starting to make pancakes for the last 5 minutes of regular time because 5:30 start. I was hoping the kid would make it to 7. The kid made it to 6:20. And since I was the one that was up and upstairs already, I got the kid. The kid wanted pancakes. So 87th minute, I started making pancakes. And you just, I don't know if you guys had this experience, but I was full on like, it seemed like around, I don't know, the 82nd or the 83rd minute. You're just waiting. You're just watching, okay, 84, 85. Like, look, Sunderland needs to score 3 goals. They have not scored like 3 goals all season, I think, yeah. Some Sunderland fans were saying. Go ahead, Mike.
So for me, it was 4:30 kickoff out here. And admittedly, whenever there's the 4:30 game that I want, I do not sleep well the night before. And I have weird half dreams that it's already 3-0 to Plymouth. And then I wake up and realize it's 2:30 in the morning. So anyway, but yeah, the first 2 goals actually kind of lulled me back into a rest. I had squad goals on the radio. I had the whatever ESPN2 was showing. ESPN2 probably had the Ipswich game on. And but yeah, first 2 goals in, I kind of lulled myself to sleep. And then midway through that second half, I was like, wait, Birmingham, Plymouth, and Blackburn are all winning.
Yeah.
And it's like, how? And what? I probably do sports gambling less than all of you guys, but I do not know what the parlay on those 4 goals would have been if you could have figured that out. But yeah, when it was like 75 minutes, I was like, uh-oh.
I mean, it's one of those two that you got to feel like you say the odds aren't in favor of it, but you're a Wednesday fan. So, of course, always bet on the scenario that's going to make it the most uncomfortable for the last.
And like, if one goal goes in, then you're like, they're going to panic. And then it's tied going
in. Almost happened, right? Nope. I do not have a good feel for how good Sunderland was in this game, because anytime they got in the final third, I was just fully panicking. Of course, they had the disallowed goal for offside. You know, after Wednesday scored, they immediately hit the woodwork like 2 minutes after, and were inches away from getting a putback there too. And just, man, it just was wildly unpleasant. I did, like, I guess Sunderland weren't good, but they also had chances. So I don't know. I don't know. I don't know. I never want to think about this game again. Basically. Is what it comes down to.
Wildly unpleasant. That's the best way to put it. It's, I mean, we put in the second goal, and the first thing that went through my mind was, oh shit.
You're just waiting for that. It's going to be 2-1 at 73 minutes, and you're going to just have. Again, a draw would have been fine, but just the entire experience. Because you're waiting for, like, okay, let Hull get 2 first half goals, right? They're chasing. I know they had to go to Plymouth, but they're chasing promotion. They need a result. Like, get Hull 2 goals. Like, Norwich, who's trying to, you know, claim their spot in the playoffs. Just, again, Birmingham, not a good team. I was just like, but they should have signed up.
I got an apology from the leader of the Americanaries.
Oh, yeah.
He texted me and he was like, I'm really sorry, man, but this is the Norwich way.
Birmingham could have used the fan that, like, put it in from 40 yards over the entire pitch invasion, but didn't like, I don't look, it's over, right? All's well that ends.
Yeah,
I guess.
And I'm trying to figure out what's worse. The situation that you all went through trying to watch the game that early in the morning and going through those emotions, or me, who match started at 7:45 and we had at Bluffton University commencement on Saturday morning. And so I had full responsibilities regalia? From 8:15 on in full regalia with colleagues that would certainly look down upon me for having my phone out the whole time. And so for me, I was lucky because one of our students, one of our graduating students, a big Chelsea fan, but a big, big supporter of Wednesday just because of his professor. I think it's so he could get a better grade in most of my classes, but
good strategy.
That's okay.
Winning strategy.
Whatever's clever.
Winning strategy. But he was bold enough to be on his phone and he was giving me updates. So I'm sitting kind of off right in the bleachers of our basketball stadium with faculty. Yeah. And he's sitting down in eyesight, and every now and then he'd look at me and give me a thumbs up. So shout out to Andy Klefik, but I was sweating. Number one, because
in the regalia,
full regalia. But number two, because I couldn't even watch. So shout out Wednesday though. And I do want to say, this is an unpopular opinion, but I want to say shout out to Chan Siri. Shout out to the club. Yep. I know. I understand. Here's the thing. We went through a tumultuous season, right? The first three quarters and then all the way through to the end were just rough. Fans were, I'm not going to comment on rightfully so or, you know, whatever, but fans were really frustrated. Fans were awful toward our chairman. He had a tough decision to make, got rid of Zisco, and clearly brought in the correct guy. Now, did he make a mistake in the first place bringing Zisco in? Probably. But he corrected the mistake. Despite all the pressure that was put on him, he brought in the right guy. Danny Roll got it done for us. Chancery, once Roll came in, I don't know if you noticed, we got a little bit more quiet, stopped responding quite as much. It does help that our form at the end of the season was, what, top five, top four. But I know it's an unpopular opinion, he led us through turmoil. He was bruised and battered and bullied by fans and supporters, quote unquote supporters. And in the end, we got it done.
I'll say two things.
You can't say much more.
Yeah, I'll say two things. One, you know, being chairman of a club, you're going to take it when the things aren't going well. And you're at times part of the problem when you're, you know, starting fights with Sheffield Wednesday legends at introductory press conferences. But that's the thing, right? All Wednesday fans have ever wanted, and again, they've had a very up and down relationship with the chairman over the last, 9 years now, is that, you know, for him to not be putting out a half dozen club statements a year and for him to let, you know, hire the right people and let them do their jobs, right? That's what happened with Darren Moore for most of his tenure in League One. That's what happened with Danny Roll for the rest of the season. Happened with Carlos for large portions of his tenure as well. That's all you really want from your chairman, is to, you know, fund the club and let the football, pick the right football people and let them do their job. And that's what ended up happening. I do have to say, we haven't actually talked about the goals themselves. The first goal, especially the movement, the interplay between Windass, Bannon, and Palmer for that goal is like textbook. And I know TW Football did a big breakdown of both the goals and how it fits in with how Wednesday likes to play under Roll. But just Palmer was playing right center back in this game. it's absolutely crazy. And, you know, we obviously had the goal against Stoke as well. He might have been playing center mid then. But, like, it really is something else to see it when it works well. And obviously the move by Valentin for the second goal, and Windass making the late, there were three players lined up there, and Windass making the late run. Not that we haven't seen Windass make a late run and score a big goal before, but just when it's clicking through all cylinders, we saw this in the West Brom game as well. Like, again, like Evan said it, they were top four, top five, you know, playoff form, let's say, for most of the run-in. With a squad that we'll get to, has a lot of out-of-contract players, but, you know, the same, for the most part, like, you know, Pobeda wasn't healthy for this game, but he certainly played his part down the stretch. You know, Ugbo obviously came in the January window, and Beadle as well. But again, for the most part, the same players that, you know, Roll didn't pick and that got off to the worst start in championship history. So I think that does, say something. Like,
something else to his credit is the press and getting players like Windass and Bannon to really, and you saw this a lot in the West Ham game, but there was a little bit of in the Sunderland. I was joking that I couldn't tell what Sunderland was trying to do, but that's credit to the press that Wednesday put up there, and to convince players to buy into that is, it can't be an easy task.
It's a lot of running for 30-year-olds and up, right? And like championship veterans, right?
Right.
Rolla said it himself, like in interviews. He's like, he was looking at the squad when he came in, and obviously, sure, you've got Basaba and Gassama and Katamatri, but, you know, Vox and Bannon have to really apply themselves as a double pivot, and they're both well. I mean, Bannon's well into his 30s, and Vox is in his 30s now too. Windass obviously has had, you know, his fair share of injuries this year and in the past too, and being asked to play that style of football, they bought in up and down the squad. You know, I do think, you know, the Danny Roll song is very fun. Don't get me wrong. And it's one thing for the fans to do it. That's great. You know, it's great. The connection between the manager and the club is, you know, as strong as it's been. Maybe even stronger than Pete Carlos. You can't fake the players doing the song in the dressing room afterwards, right? That's not just a put on. Like, they've, like, you know, it's one thing to talk about how great the manager is and your media hits and things like that. But I feel like there's, like, a genuine connection there with the squad that you just can't fake.
He seems like a proper, like a blue collar coach. You know, there's no messing around. There's no nonsense. He's going to get out there. He's going to get his guys, and they're going to play his football. And apparently it's been pretty good because right, look, the last 14 games of the season, we're fourth in the league.
They've put, and he's put the squad on blast when he thought the performance wasn't there, right? He certainly did that in the Huddersfield game specifically. Like, if they're not going to run, I don't know what. But I can't do anything, right? Like, this is what the way you got to play requires. Like, I can't coach effort, right? You can't coach effort.
You know, it wouldn't be an Evan Skillinger appearance on the podcast without mentioning Liam Palmer.
Mm-hmm.
How about him just making himself indispensable and just what do you need? All right, cool. I'll do it. Right. Like, he's played all over the place. It's been fantastic to watch. And then I just had to say that, right? The other thing, I'm interested in what you just said and interested in what the other two guys have to say here. You said Roll's popularity might have surpassed Pete Carlos.
Mm-hmm.
And that's an interesting statement to me. I don't know. That's a tough one. That's a tough one for me.
No, and I think the clubs was in two very different states, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, obviously, they were not in particularly great shakes when Carlos took over, but they were a couple seasons back up in the championship. You know, the Stuart Gray era, for whatever it was fairly stable as a mid-table championship side or whatever.
As such,
yes. But and like, look, Carlos got them to Wembley, obviously, and the playoffs the year after. You know, the closest they've been to the Premier League in, well, really, since they left the Premier League. And I don't want to poo-poo that, but I just think when Roll came in, the situation was so dire that, you know, nobody would have blamed him if they played well, better the rest of the year, and finished 23rd, right? But to get them... I think that the main difference, the recency of League One football and the, like, the reminder of what League One football, like the specter of that, as I talked about in the intro. And again, I'm being a little cheeky, right? Like, those are long time English clubs, members of the English pyramid. I just never want to see them again, especially their away grounds. But like, and it's not only the feeling that safety, you know, getting them to safety with the job he had in front of him. But it's the, and look, I don't know how the summer is going to go. We'll come on to that. It's the suspicion that he is a manager. He's a Premier League quality manager. That is what that's something like. And if you give him the squad, like, he can be the one to fulfill, you know, what didn't happen at Wembley 8 years ago. And I think that's the difference. And look, it can all go sour in the summer. We saw it last summer. The funding has to be there for the squad and honestly for the infrastructure in the club. And I think that's something that Roll himself indicated in recent media availability, especially after the Ipswich game. It's not just about, you know, the players. It's just not about spending on the squad. It's about spending on the training ground, on the youth team, on, you know, everything. I think he was specifically pointing out relative to Ipswich, right, where they got that kind of ground level investment. And again, a manager that's come from Leipzig and Southampton, where that is just built into the DNA of those clubs now. And that's not what Wednesday is, right? And not Wednesday has been. You know, when they've gotten close to, you know, even when Carlos got them to Wembley, right, that was a, you know, a look, we all have fond memories of that squad, but at the time it was a fairly mercenary squad that first year, right? Like, you went out and bought however many, like 8-9 new players or whatever. I think the only holdovers were like Kieran Lee and Kieran Westwood. And like, a lot of those players have gone on, you know, Barry Bannon's obviously been there 400 matches on since then, but it does feel a little bit different. Like, role, I don't know that Carvajal was ever going to be the, like, he might have gotten us to Premier League, but he was never going to be the one to really change, you know, the foundations and the future arc of Sheffield Wednesday. You know, we might have been Hull instead, right? You know, a little bit of a yo-yo team back down to League One at 1.2 as Hull were. But it does feel like Danny Rolle sort of could be the, you know, the, like, this never actually happens, right? He's clearly ambitious himself, but he could be the face of this club for a decade, right? If he wanted to be, like, he's that level.
It seems that seems the way he is more Wolves than Hull.
Yes, it's a good way to put it. Actually,
you know, it's you know, Wolf. Now, how long have Wolves been up now? 5-6 years.
Yeah,
and they're a pretty stalwart mid-table Premier League team now. They're not threatening for the top six, but they're also never in a relegation scrap. So that's what I see with Rolle. He seems to have a kind of a long-term plan, and let's just hope that, you know, the chairman doesn't let him go over the summer.
Right. It's a, they've got to be on the same page with the long-term plan. For it to be a long-term plan. Go ahead, Evan.
So I have to jump off here in a second, but I want to say something, just a funny or interesting story about Rolle. The night before he was announced as the manager, he was in Sheffield, obviously. That's how it works. And then you interview, you find a place to stay, you get introduced the next day.
Like 17 different interviews he's gone through. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. So remember, this is during the time when Chancery had just put out the statement that he wasn't going to pay put any more money into the club. Mm-hmm. And everyone's like, well, does that mean our debts are, or our bills aren't going to get paid? You know, people are just attacking the club, and you would think there would be this stressful, tense atmosphere at the club, like within the club. Right. So the night before, we had a supporters trust, not supporters trust. Hold on. That's a whole different thing. But we had an engagement panel meeting, and I was on Zoom, obviously, but there were some of our delegates at Hillsborough, and there was a moment where we're in the middle of the meeting, and then everyone gets quiet and looks, you can just see everyone look at the door, right? And then everyone starts to giggle and laugh, and, you know, everyone on Zoom was like, what's going on here? What's going on? And everyone's just giddy and happy and laughing. And then we get a message from one of our delegates that was in there that said Danny Rolle had just walked in. It was the first time they had figured out that Danny Rolle was going to be the manager. And the experience that the folks from the panel had at Hillsborough that day, they said the meeting got a little bit tense at times, but they said it was a completely relaxed environment. People were happy and just talking about the future. And there was just this, it seemed like there was this sense in the club that, like, yeah, Danny Rolle's the guy, like, we're going to be okay. Now, maybe that's an indicator that they're not taking things seriously enough at the club. I'm not saying that, but you could maybe read between the lines and see that. But also I think that like he just had kind of this way about him that made people feel more comfortable and more confident. I like what you said, Tommy. Like, I would love to see him, you know, take us to the Premier League and just be our guy for a while. You know, if he's already nearing Carlos levels, or in some people's perception above Carlos's status and what he did for the club, I can't imagine what a promotion campaign next year would do in terms of his legacy with the club.
So we've kind of already slid into the season review portion, I suppose. So, like, writ large, did we have fun this year? Was this enjoyable? Like, I don't... It's a very different experience, right, being the League One bullies and points record. And obviously the way they went up was incredible. You know, historical. The history makers, as the ESPN Plus broadcast.
So opined. I would argue that once the bleeding stopped in late October, we weren't... I mean, I know everybody says it was impossible, but I think a lot of us really felt it's possible and it's not going to be pretty. Mm. And once the bleeding stopped, it was pretty cool. It was a pretty cool ride.
I think the QPR game was maybe the turning point for me when they got, cause it, like, and you look at it now, like that's a big 3 points, literally. Like, you can look at any number of wins that were the difference here. I was just when you saved by 3 points, but after they like, cause they just never win that game. This is not a game they win. You know, even under Carlos, really. And to pull that out, and then, like, they didn't really kick on in January because of the schedule and things like that, but it got them, it kept them within a shout. And that's what, you know, it's what they were basically from when Roll took over to 2 weeks ago, within a shout of safety. And yeah, I don't know. Like, I mean, there were obviously times, especially under Munoz, and even like some of those early Role matches, and some of just the away games where they got battered. You know, Ipswich and Leicester and Huddersfield, obviously. Just like wildly unpleasant games to watch. But you know, they always bounce back, right? They never under Role really got into a funk. Like, they always got a performance the next week when they needed it. And look,
it wasn't a fun season until February.
Sure.
You know, it was, oh, God, we're terrible. You know, just, the worst record in the history of the championship, no wins in 14. And it was, I mean, we have here in Charleston, we have what's called the Low Country Lower League Trophy. It's a bunch of us, you know, the NAR supporter. We got a Watford supporter. We've got a Nottingham Forest, who's usually with us. But we call it the Welsh Trophy because it's a whole bunch of L's. But it's been, and I'm just getting roasted over and over all the way until February. And then every one of them, to a man, was like, God, I hope you stay up. God, I hope you stay up. That's when it started to become fun.
From a sport management perspective, professor,
you have an expert.
This season was no, I'm not an expert. I'm just saying, like, from like if you wanted to do a study, organizational management, uh-huh, and how management impacts performance on the field and club culture. Like, this was the perfect season to study. Like, this was awesome.
You could also do Birmingham in the other direction if you want.
Yeah, sure. But absolute shambles.
Yeah.
Like, club falling apart. Some fans, myself included, thinking our club may fold, not just get relegated.
Yeah.
Our club may go into administration.
Yeah.
We thought we were days away from administration. Mm-hmm. To go from that to, hey, we could have the manager of the future, and we stayed up, and we had the fourth best form in the last 3 months of the season, and like, holy cow, the turnaround, and all the different blips, not even blips, like mountains, moving through the season with different, like we said, club statements and finances and potential embargoes and all this different stuff, to come out and to finish a season where we are all just so happy and relaxed talking about Sheffield Wednesday and looking forward to the future. I think it's tremendous. Like, overall, I know there were some awful times this season, but overall, what a wonderful experience.
It's character building, right? Like, not that Wednesday fans need more character in this regard, but.
Yeah, if you're someone that likes to learn through struggle, which is the best way to learn.
I mean, I've seen the debates online of comparing this entire season to where we were exactly a year ago, and between those two games.
Yeah,
being down four and then having the, which of those is a bigger achievement? It's, I mean, they're both amazing when you get down to it. So they both took coaching and trust. So,
fellas, I am stepping out of this podcast. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, same time next year, Evan.
Same time next year. Maybe I'll jump on for the season preview. We'll see how the summer goes. We'll see how the summer goes. But no, fellas, good talking with you. Have a good night.
Good see you again, Evan.
Yeah. So now we have a couple, end of season business to deal with. Who's your player of the year?
I'm going to go Will Volks.
Will Volks, okay.
Volks, who you got, Tommy?
I got Beetle.
Interesting. It's interesting because there's not – you have a combination. You have choosing from two categories, right? The players that were there all season but maybe had dips in form here and there, or the players that had a lot of impact but maybe, Marvin Johnson was obviously out of the squad for – the entire Munoz tenure, or Deshaun Bernard missed time with injury, Josh Windass missed time with injury. And on the other side, Bannon. Hey, look, you can pick Barry Bannon. You can just default to Barry Bannon. That's fine. I have no problem with that. I don't know that it was his best season in a Wednesday shirt. He certainly put in good performances. Vox is an interesting one because of how integral I think he is to the way they played down the stretch,
so
especially.
I went with Vox. Yeah. I went with Vox because I think he helped make Danny Roll's style of play happen more than anybody else. And everybody else kind of followed that lead. But I think he was the one. And, it's kind of, and I don't want to just say it's because it was such a contrast to last year, but I think it was because of him getting the Danny Roll stuff and seeing things from him we'd never seen before.
I also think that if there's an argument to be made, if you're going by somebody who's going to play the style of play that the manager wants, it's like Evan was saying, it's Liam Palmer.
Sure.
That guy does what he's told when he needs to be there. All right. He always puts in a shift. It's the guy never half-asses it. Is he going to, be on a Premier League winning club? Absolutely not. But is he that guy that you want to be that role player, especially when you're fighting for promotion to get into the Prem? 100%.
I think for me, I thought about this a lot, and I think this is like a weird, like, null set kind of argument, but I think the difference when Deshaun Bernard was in the back line versus when Deshaun Bernard wasn't in the back line was just massive. And he doesn't always do the flashy stuff, but he's just a brick wall back there. And he can play with the ball at his feet. He can make runs. He can play the kind of, overlapping center back that Roll wants at times. And I thought, minute per minute, I thought he was the best player in a Wednesday shirt this season. Now, I don't know if enough minutes add up there because of the injuries, but I think he would be my pick. Also, they got to get him signed long term now, and they're still in the championship. But this took a total team effort to get them over the line. You can look at Anthony Musaba. You can look at Marvin Johnson, certainly, when he came back into the squad. The improvements that Paul Valentin made over the second half of the season, too, to become not just the first choice right back, but basically, one of the first names on the team sheet most weeks, I think. Okay, favorite match of the season?
So I'm going to go for – I'm actually going to go for a draw.
Okay.
It was Norwich at Hillsborough. Okay,
yeah.
Down 2-0 and doing – and again, as we said before, we normally don't win that game.
Right.
And to put it in with two set pieces that were almost identical.
Yeah.
And pissing off the other manager for a change. That, in hindsight, kind of spearheaded the final run-in. So – that game there, just seeing them not try to give up was fantastic.
Tommy.
Other than that, it's composite of the last three games.
Yeah. Mine was, oddly enough, Millwall.
That's a good one, yeah.
It was, the end of it started our big run towards the end of the season. It was, you know, the 2-0 victory. It was, it was scrappy, but not too scrappy. We had two in the first half, and it was, and they were always threatening again. You know, doing that classic Wednesday. Oh crap, they're going to come back and draw this even, and but we didn't let them. It was, I thought that was a big defensive performance for us, which helped turn our season around.
Yeah, I think there's a few different games I could go with, but I go back to QPR at home right before the holidays, or right after the, right in the holiday fixture season. Again, a 6-point relegation. Look, both teams ended up surviving as it went, but like that one felt like, you know, you talk about momentum, and if they had gone, I think, 8 back again of safety, I don't know if they dig themselves back out. I don't know if they have the, they're as aggressive in the transfer window. I don't know how that all goes, but to get that win in Hillsborough, and like, again, it's like what, the 87th and 92nd minute, like really smash and grab shit. I think just really set the tone for the second half of the season, which takes us to favorite goal.
Can I say the own goal for Blackburn?
That's fine. You can say that if you want.
I have to go for the, actually, I'll go for the Windass goal in that game, because it just, it, again, it made me think, like, this is the Windass from a year ago who's going to show up in big games and do big things.
And sure did.
So, yes.
Tommy.
It's a chintzy one, but Musaba's goal against West Brom. Mm. I mean, it again, 22nd minute early on. All right, let's find our groove. It was a night. It wasn't spectacular, but it was like, all right, this is the thing that we need right now to make sure that we're staying up. It's, we got to beat West Brom. We need it. We need all that. And it set the tone. And Beadle had an amazing match then.
So. I'm gonna go a little off the board here. This was just one of those goals. Just made me think. You know, it's just one of those ones that's just pure art. It's like kind of perverse. And it's Liam Palmer against Cardiff in the FA Cup. Just an absolute put his laces through it from 35 yards. Like, doing the full Shaquille O'Neal, I'm sorry, I was not familiar with your game. Like, I did not know he had that in his locker. And I think I even said at the time, like, all these top-level footballers can do that, right? Can do the crossbar challenge from 40 yards in their sleep or whatever. They all practice the Ronaldinho shit at the end of training. You know, they always live that. But just to see him, like, roll it out there in a game, and yeah, like, not a particularly well-attended third-round FA Cup game that was a bizarre fixture from start to finish. But just like, yeah. Yeah, I'm Liam Palmer, and I'm going to score an Adam Reach-esque worldie right now.
How crazy is it? I was thinking about Liam Palmer's career, because I don't know. We don't know when his last day is going to be. But Wednesday can actually put together one of those highlight reels of all of his goals.
Yeah,
whereas
they can,
like,
yeah.
2 years ago, you would have laughed at that. Now it's like, oh, he's actually got a dozen goals now.
Yeah. All right, that is the season review. Let's take a break. We'll come back. Take a look forward to the 2024-2025 season, and go over some predictions from the past year as well. Welcome back. We don't have any news. The season's over. No news is good news, I guess, so far. It's just me and Mike now. And we will take a peek forward to the offseason. We'll probably do several podcasts, hopefully fewer than last offseason, if all goes well. But that does take us to the question that's going to dictate how it all goes in June and July, both in terms of the club and in terms of our podcast schedule. And is Danny Rowell the manager for the first fixture of the 2024-2025 season, Mike?
I mean, the obvious answer is I hope so, and I honestly think so. What he did was amazing. I don't know how many big clubs,
right?
Are,
you know, Sunderland themselves were supposedly
someone who has
sniffing around.
Literally,
the end
I
of
mean,
the season,
it's funny. finishing up all of the certifications and whatnot. So it's, I mean, I don't know. And if it were a big club like Sunderland, what's who is he really going to want to go somewhere else in the championship? So I don't think so. So I think he'll be around.
I think so. Like, look, there's going to have to be a show of support from the chairman, I think, both financially and infrastructure and, you know, both in the squad. Like, just, I mean, look, it's running a championship team costs money, right? And running the way Roll wants to run it is going to cost, you know, I have this conversation a lot, as a baseball writer and someone that specifically focuses on, you know, minor league baseball prospects, player development, things like that, is that it's, and this is true in baseball too, it's much easier to convince your owner in any sport, right, to go sign, for the Wednesday example, to go sign Jordan Rhodes, right? It's easy to convince them to go sign Jordan Rhodes. Proven goal scorer at this level, the last missing piece. You know, goals win games. It's that simple. It's a lot harder to convince.
And supposedly instant, supposedly instant results.
Yes, but it's instant results, see. Right. But, yeah. Yes, but it's harder to convince them to spend that same £10 million on infrastructure stuff, training, youth team development, scouting, analytics, that stuff, because it's not a tangible result. You know, if you produce a Jordan Rhodes from your own, whether it's academy or, you know, scouting the lower leagues or things like that, you know, in a transfer for a fraction of what actual Jordan Rhodes costs, you know, it pays for itself, right? That's the idea. But it's not, it's harder to point to it tangibly. And again, we talked about it with Danny Roll coming from, you know, Leipzig, you know, and Southampton. You know, Southampton, obviously, you look at it from the academy point of view, and Leipzig from the scouting and, you know, operations point of view, right? The ability to get in players from lower leagues or smaller leagues, and then develop them and sell them on so you can fund your operation. You know, Wednesday has obviously run at a loss for years and years and years. That's why years and years and years and years and years. The books are public now at this point for more recent seasons. But, you know, and Wednesday, especially under Chan Siri, has never been this kind of club, right? Like, they have not really brought, you know, the youth players they have brought through, they have not been able to sell on. Obviously, there's the George Hirsch debacle, but looking at players like, you know, Alex Hunt or I think who else has been, Liam Shaw, like they always seem to leave when they're out of contract. You don't get a you don't get a fee for them. And like, look, it's very, you know, balance sheety, but that's the reality of modern football too. Right? No, Wednesday are not in a position where they can be, you know, economic bullies at this level. They can't spend like Leeds and Leicester and Southampton teams that have. Leicester was in Europe and won the Premier League within the last like decade. That's just a different kind of financial might. So the focus does have to turn to, you know, finding not even the next Jordan Rhodes, but the next Bailey Catamatari, right?
Yeah.
I think this all gets worked out. I do not want to go through this again. I'll say this about Roll. I'm sure he has ambitions, and there might come to a point in time where Sheffield Wednesday can no longer satisfy his ambitions, or he just gets his head turned because, you know, Leipzig, for one.
Exactly.
But yeah, I think if Leipzig comes sniffing around, he's done a hell of a job at Wednesday. So that's the reality. But they won't be able to keep him forever, but one more year would be nice.
Again, he's 35, which I'm wondering if there's anyone on the squad a lot older than him. Uh-huh. Might be. But I think my hunch, my wish is that maybe all these teams are saying, okay, so we saw him pull off this comeback. Now let's see what he does with the transfer window.
Yeah.
And, you know, let's keep this audition going for one more season. And then if this is again, top 10, top 8 finish, knock on wood, then we'll see people come in for him. And I think if it's not Leipzig, it's going to be the Brightons and the Wolves maybe coming in for someone too.
You know, Forest, if they go down next year or this year, I suppose, but there's always going to be bigger clubs. That's just the reality of it, and that applies to the Wednesday coach, applies to Wednesday players as well. You know, if you see players like Katamatri or Musaba or Gassama continue to take step forwards at this level, there are going to be teams You know, they're willing to open the checkbook, and that's something once they have to. I know you deal with it. Well, there's worse things in the world than to be Brentford, right?
Yes, exactly. Well, that's exactly it. We've never been that selling team, like you just said. So,
So looking at the squad writ large. So, per Joe Cran, these are the players under contract or with a team option for next season. Charles Diaby, Bombo Diaby, Akinfemowo, Paul Valentin, Delgado, who I guess is obviously still recovering from surgery, Callum Patterson, who will never leave, Malik Wilkes, Anthony Mbesaba, JD Gassama, Bailey Katamatsuri, who obviously they extended during the season. I assume Michael Smith has one more year because I assume he was a 3-year deal when they signed him. Who would be your, so of the rest of the squad, we'll assume they are out of contract. Who would be your top three priorities to bring back?
Okay. I mean, there's the sentimental answer, which is you want to see Bannon and Palmer finish out their careers here. But I also don't know that they are priorities to that we have to work as hard to get to keep them.
Interesting.
So, man. I actually think Ugbo.
Yeah, I was going to go with Ugbo too. I would say it's a weird situation.
Dynamic one, yeah.
Because, you know.
To be honest, I forget who's on loan and who's signed. So for a lot of these.
So he is on loan from, Ugbo is on loan from Twa. It's unclear if he's out of contract or not. They're obviously just relegated to the third division in France, but also are a part of the City Football Group conglomerate. So they could easily, if he is still under contract, I don't know if he is, with Twa, they could look to move him to another club like Girona or whatever, right? They have clubs all over the place. Somebody in Belgium, I don't even know who their Belgium club is. NYCFC, why not, right? But if he is out of contract, yeah, I think with him specifically, the thing we saw, especially in the second half of the season, was he is the kind of number nine that fits how Danny Rowe wants to play. And he buys into the system. He can score goals. His movement off the ball is great. His passing, I think, is underrated as well. So just a complete striker. And again, might be a player you can get in and not have to spend proven championship striker levels of funds yet, because he isn't a proven championship striker yet. He's a, you know, he's not, I don't know if I'd call him a prospect per se. He's probably a little bit older than that, but you know, he's 25. Like, he still should be entering his peak years. So,
right. Yeah. And I guess, I mean, also in the same notion of the Loney is, find out what's going on with Beadle in Brighton.
Yeah.
There's especially these last few games, he's kind of knocked it out of the park, to mix metaphors. Yeah, but yeah,
sort of, I think he's grown into his distribution's gotten better. Obviously his shot stopping when called upon has been excellent, especially in the West Brom game, as Tommy noted. And they're going to need a keeper, right? Dawson's out of contract as well. And look, Charles looks like an interesting player, but he's clearly not ready for first team football yet. I think at this point, you're probably going to want a veteran backup and send him out on loan to a League One team or something like that. You know, similar to what they did with Cameron Dawson and Joe Wildsmith over the years. But
so though it's also interesting, and you brought this up with the whole locker room singing to Danny Rule, but and then also if anyone has watched the Josh Windass short that was put out in the last, I guess, couple of hours based upon the footage. What those guys were saying about the chemistry, and it seems sincere. It's also what the kind of thing you say for a documentary, but it does seem legitimate that people do want to stay there, and people do want to play there, and maybe even people do want to play for Danny Rule at this point.
I mean, for Windass himself, he was saying that you know, they're already talking about a new contract there, and obviously he's had interest in Argentina and MLS.
It's MLS.
Well, but yeah,
but you're listening. Austin beckons. You'll love it.
But yeah, again, Windass is another player. TW Football has made this point. I think it was in the West Brom game specifically. They were tucking Valentin, and it's like a false eight. It's be more of a 4-3-3. But that's really what Windass does, right? He loves to freelance, and he kind of really fits the way Rowe likes to, you know, move and pivot players around sort of the channels.
You stay healthy, though?
Well, look, he's not an answer in and of himself, yeah. Right? But I think he can definitely do a job at this level still. You know, you can't rely on him for, 40-plus matches next year.
I mean, we'd love for him.
That's true. Jan Poveda, again, they kind of, I know it sucks for him, obviously being hurt as much as he was, but I think they're in a spot too where he didn't get a lot of match time at Leeds. He only intermittently played at Wednesday. He's out because of injuries. He's out of contract now. I wonder if he's going to fly under the radar of a lot of other championship teams, which might allow Wednesday to bring him. They need to bring him back. Like, he really is.
Yeah. He's
right that. Like, he can do what, that same kind of role that we just talked about with Josh Windass, too. I think, if anything, he's a little trickier, too. Like, a little more. Windass is very direct, right? But Poveda can do a little bit different look on the wing at times as well. Look, they're going to need to, based on that, they're going to need to fill out a defense. I think Deshaun Bernard will be my top priority there. Again, he had 1 year left on his deal when they brought him in. They didn't extend. I think them staying up will help in that regard. Another player that missed time with injuries, so maybe there'll be less fervent interest from other teams in the division with more money to spend. Again, that might play into Wednesday's favor there. And I think, jumping on this, they're not going to bring everybody back. That's just not the reality of football. But where are the areas you think they need to strengthen the most in the offseason?
I would like to see them strengthen the defense.
Yeah.
This is the first year where I haven't said that striker that we need, because I think we're okay. I mean, the goal started going in at the end, and we've seen that there is room there. But I would say the defense, and also if Danny Rule sees someone who he just loves that would help on the press, a midfielder that would really be dynamic on the press, then go for that. But the back line, whatever, any strength there would be great, and which also would free up Liam Palmer to get up more. So that's kind of right.
Yeah, they need like that. Again, they obviously play both a 4 and a 5 in the back as dictated, but just someone they can put in the center of that center back 3. Because again, Bernard's not really that player. Famavo is not really that player. But to see, like a Mark McGuinness type, right? It's not gonna be Mark McGuinness. He signed an extension at Chelsea, but that kind of, maybe Roll digs into his bag of German center backs and finds somebody. Again, we haven't really seen him because of the nature of the January transfer window, I think, as well, and how much time he had to prepare for, but he's got a whole offseason, right, to figure out who he can bring in and who he wants to bring in and sort of depress those scouting contacts more. Getting a stronger and more consistent back three too, right? We talked about how much he rotated his center backs this year. And I think, look, they got the clean sheets when they needed them at the end of the season, but I think some more consistency in the back line would help them, even if they're always a team that's going to play a little bit on the knife edge because of their style. Just say if you have three center backs, ball playing center back, sort of a defensive marshal and things like that, they can all sort of get together and play week in and week out and get that kind of understanding. I think it would help them not ship 6 goals against Ipswich, for one example. All right. We made some predictions at the beginning of the year. We will now go over them. We made some predictions on the show. We also sent out to the people, the listeners out there, other podcast hosts, etc., the Owls America's community at large, let's say, to do their predictions of the 2023-2024 season. Mike has helpfully collated these. It started with, where will Wednesday finish in the table? So nobody actually predicted 20th. Rich in Portland was 19th. I also picked 19th on the show. Although I did say they would peak at 14th or 15th. They peaked at 20th, which is fine, as it turns out. The general feeling was somewhere between, you know, comfortably safe, which, I mean, they were safe. I wouldn't call it comfortable, but somewhere in the bottom half of the table. We can now move on to, just for the hosts, Mike picked 16th, Justin picked 18th, and I picked 19th, as I said before. Which teams are getting promoted? Patty was the only person to pick Ipswich to go up, and I went back and listened to get the host picks, and Justin gave him a little bit of shit for picking Ipswich. So that's one for Patty.
Yeah, Ipswich got a bunch of relegation votes, but yeah.
Nobody will get all three. I especially won't. I picked Leicester, Burrow, and Blackburn. Mike picked Leeds, Leicester, and Watford, so it's a shot for 2 out of 3. And Justin picked Leicester, Leeds, and Burrow, so also a shot for 2 out of 3, but also Burrow. So only three people picked three top six teams. Patty picked Leeds, Southampton, and Ipswich. Obviously, he cannot get all three because both Leeds and Southampton can't go up. John Finley picked Leicester, Southampton, and Leeds. Again, can't get all three because Southampton and Leeds both can't get up. And Dimmy picked Norwich, Southampton, and West Brom. So managed to get three playoff teams, but none of the automatics. Yeah, good work. Moving to relegation, Rich, who is also the closest to the 20th place finish, got all three relegation teams, Rotherham, Huddersfield, and Birmingham.
What was the dark horse in that one? I guess it was Huddersfield.
Huddersfield, yeah, I guess. It was the least picked of the teams that were picked. I also picked them and Rotherham. But as I am obligated to pick Millwall, which, look, until the last month of the season was in play. Mike, you picked Birmingham, Cardiff, and Plymouth. Again, like all Cardiff, again, got out of it mostly by the end of the season. Birmingham, Plymouth barely did, yeah. And Justin picked QPR, Rotherham, and Cardiff. Again, you know, teams that were certainly in and amongst it. So leading scorer, this went badly. Nobody picked fewer than 12 goals. Musaba with 8 in all competitions was the leading scorer. So nobody was close. Nobody picked Musaba. I don't know if they'd officially signed Musaba by the time we did this. I thought they had, but.
Well, no, but we did have a vote for a new signing, and two people voted for new signings.
Yes, we did have two votes for new signings, including Tommy. And I just, one from Dimmy for Ashley Fletcher, who did not score a goal this year. If you were wondering, behind Musaba with 8, Windass with 7, Ogbo with 7, and Katamatri with 6. Both me and Justin picked Michael Smith. I picked 13, Justin 14, and Mike picked Josh Windass with 15.
Because nobody wants to start off the preseason by saying, I think Windass is going to score 7 this year.
Yeah, fair enough. Wednesday player of the year, most of the votes came in for Bannon and Byers. And Bannon, fair enough, might win it. I picked Hakan Famewo for some reason. I think my reasoning was that I thought it would come down to the defense, which it certainly didn't. And Mike and Justin both picked George Byers, which I think, look, a lot of people picked Byers. I think it was a very reasonable pick. He was just never really quite match fit.
But his support at the Blackburn game Blackburn Rovers will go down in history.
Who will put in a what former Wednesday player will put a man of the match performance in against Wednesday?
I don't remember any.
Yeah, I don't. So the only one I can think of. So George Hurst got a lot of votes here. I picked Mark McGuinness. I remember McGuinness. I thought he was fine in the Cardiff games, but I don't remember. Mike, you picked Adam Reach, who certainly did not in the West Brom game. And Justin picked Jamie Vardy, who did score against Wednesday. He scored one of the four goals against Wednesday, I think, but I wouldn't call it man of the match. I think, honestly, didn't Aidan Flint put them out on penalties this year?
Oh, did he?
I thought he did in the League Cup.
It wasn't like some. Yeah, that sounds familiar.
I think Aidan Flint scored like the winning penalty or something against them in the League Cup or something annoying like that.
That sounds familiar. And we need to clarify, this is not Academy Projects. This is anyone who has ever had an affiliation with Wednesday.
Yes, so. Former Wednesday player. They just all picked George Hurst because it's...
Loney, whatever,
How many managers will Wednesday have this season? It's a pretty good spread. I think most people picked two. Andy Fox picked three, as did Andy McIlwain and Tommy. I guess we're not counting. I think we said specifically we're not counting interims, obviously.
No caretakers.
So, Mike, you said two. You were correct. Justin said one. Yeah. I agree with Justin. And I said, you got to give him the whole season because oh, who's wow. going to take the job if they fire him? Yeah.
Well,
we found out it's Danny Roll. And we're all better for it. Any interesting cup predictions? Very boring cup this year. So nothing here really. Plays out. Predict the scores of the Leeds games, which were actually kind of wild, but they drew at Leeds and lost at home, which nobody
no one got close to that.
No one actually got. How many chairman statements will be published this season, and summarize one of them? So how many were there? Based on this?
I don't even want to go back and count them, but I think were there four?
Okay, it seems based on your highlighting that there were four. Yeah.
Whatever.
I will give myself some credit. I said two, but one of them was going to be them changing the shirt sponsor. I mean, I said D-Taxis. It wasn't D-Taxis, but yes. I mean, they did have to change the shirt sponsor. And the most Wednesday thing to happen this season, I did not actually listen to that part. We didn't do it on the pod, apparently.
Yeah, a lot of people thought Darren Moore was going to
come back at some point. Yeah,
get back at the end of the year. Yeah, not and nothing did
there
anything
really
truly
any, nothing truly weird happened this season, I guess, or truly Wednesday, outside of all the things that happened that were truly Wednesday. We get to do it all again next year, Mike.
What are your plans for the summer?
I mean, I'm moving. I'm going to hopefully not do four podcasts about Wednesday's managerial search like I did last summer.
Yeah.
Nothing too interesting, really.
An NWSL summer to look forward to, which is fun.
I did. I took the kid to her first game last weekend. Not this previous week, the weekend before. She made it like 15 minutes. Houston. She made it like 15 minutes into the second half, which is better than I thought she would do. She was very excited about the bouncy playground that they have set up in the little concourse area.
Yeah,
yeah, they do a really good job with the kid stuff. Like, there's a lot of kid stuff. Kid stuff out front. She now has $44 Utah Royals scarf that I did not realize was $44 when I grabbed it off the hooks, but whatever.
The family nature of NWSL. We were at a game years ago when my son was little, and I was with my sister-in-law, and Nathan just ran off into the crowd.
Yeah.
And she freaked. And I was like, it's NWSL. And she's from Michigan. I'm like, this isn't 80,000 people at the Big House. It's NWSL.
She was very excited they had Sour Patch Kids, and very excited about the lion mascot. Those were the two big wins of the evening for me. So we'll try to do more of those this summer. Yeah, that's all I got. It's been episode 246 of the Owls AmeriCast. Sheffield Wednesday opinion with an American accent. You can find us on the internet at owlsamericas.com. Email the show at owlsamericas@gmail.com. The out of office is going up as soon as I publish this. And find and follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Owls AmeriCas. Our podcast intro and bumper is by fellow Wednesdayites Reverend of the Makers, also Boney M. There's going to be Boney M on this show. The podcast is on iTunes, Spotify, SoundCloud, Google Podcasts, Podbean, probably anywhere else you choose to download the podcast. There's no wrong way to listen to the show. Just do what feels right. Wherever you choose to consume the Owls AmeriCast, we ask you rate and view the show so it's more Wednesdayites find our ramblings. Mike is on Twitter at Cascadia Owls. All right. Well, we've got an official prediction. We already did the will Danny Roll be the opening fixture manager? Will Barry Bannon and Liam Palmer be in the match day squad for the first match of the season?
Match day squad.
Then the 17 or 21, whatever it is.
Yeah.
Actually, I do math. 18.
Yes.
Yes.
Both,
I agree.
Yes.
I agree. But we'll cover all the the comings and goings. Not next week, but we'll see you soon. Hopefully not too soon.